All right, everybody. Well, everybody's just me and Verlan right now because y'all are going to listen to the recording. So, tonight we're going to catch up a little bit on what happened during the week, go into the presentation. Verlan and I are going to have a stimulating conversation about the presentation. Then we'll review the homework in close. And there's one part of the presentation today that is really cool, and I can't wait to share it with you, Verlan.
Okay.
Can you tell us one of my favorite parts?
That's your favorite part? Okay.
Okay, so basic updates here. The questions are, how was your week? I know we talked about this a little bit before we started the recording. I wasn't sure if there's anything else you wanted to share with everybody.
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay.
No, I'm fine.
Good. Did you have a chance to reach out to any of your classmates?
I did not. I did not reach out this week. I just, I don't know. I was kind of working on my own stuff really hard, and I didn't reach out.
Yeah. Well, I was totally thrilled that Judy did.
I was too.
That was really cool.
That was great. Yeah. That was great, Judy. Yeah.
Yeah, I love.
And to see that. And to see that, Judy, that you're benefiting from the recording, you know. Yeah.
It kind of makes you understand why I record, doesn't it? Because, you know, it's hard sometimes, you know, to know if anybody really listens to it, you know, after you go through all the effort to record, and since Judy hasn't been able to join any of the classes so far, knowing that she's keeping up and that she's keeping everybody in her thoughts and wishing everybody well was just
makes it all worthwhile that they have to record it.
Well, then the next question is, what did you think of Chapter 13?
The one on masks.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, as I said a little bit to Karen before, I just didn't identify with this chapter as much as I did with some of the other ones. It just, I think I'm being honest in saying that I don't think I wear masks very well. I don't hide my feelings very well. I wear a mask at work, a professional mask, because I think that's appropriate, you know. And then I wear a mask with my mom, who's 91, because I don't want her to worry, nor do I want her to get angry at my ex, you know. I want her to have a feeling of peace, you know, so I don't open myself up to her. Other than that, I don't think I wear any masks. I'm trying to wear a little bit more of a mask with my children, because I think it's appropriate that I do that a little bit better. So I'm trying to do that a little bit better. But so you know, when we first read this, it kind of sounded like masks were, you know, you should take off all your masks and not have any. But I think some masks are appropriate. You know.
Yeah, I totally agree with that comment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of ways that people will use masks is to cover the grief of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are more successful with it than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
The people who try to wear the mask constantly are not very successful because they're way too smart. No matter how skilled they are at acting like everything's okay, people will still see through it.
Right.
Yeah. And they don't give out Academy Awards for, you know, not sharing the true about you. So, yeah. You know, it's masks are things that help us to get along within society a lot of times. But they aren't always so necessary for those closest to us. So I know we were talking beforehand, you know, about you being able to visit with your sister, right? And, you know, your sister, because you do have such a good relationship with some person, you know, with one person, I'm sorry, that you can be very free with, right? And so your propensity to be maskless is very comfortable and natural and wonderful.
Right.
But as you said, you know, at the office, not so good. So you need to think about having a mask there. So I think I shared last week that I would wear a mask of everything fine. Everything's fine. Not want to go into any details. Just everything's fine. And everybody could look at me and say, everything's not fine, Karen. Everything's fine. And it took me a long time to be able to drop that. To be more genuine. And to be able to express emotions in a way that comes so naturally to you, Karen. So, you know, I think I don't remember when we were talking about, you know, how sometimes things that we consider to be very natural and that everybody does, right, is actually kind of our superpower. And that it's not so common. It's not what everybody else does. And it may not have been here. It may have been with an individual client. I was having a conversation this week. Sometimes things come near together. It is a theme that comes up very, very regularly. And I think that people have a tendency to assume that someone else is wearing a mask if they don't have the same types of skills that become very natural to us. Right? So my mask wearing, right, of everything was fine, was one of the ways that I ignored my emotions. And so for a long time, right, when I saw someone who wasn't able to ignore their emotions, right, I just didn't understand it. It just did not compute. And I can only guess, Verlan, that because you are so in touch with your emotions, that when you're around someone who isn't, that you might assume that they're wearing a mask.
Probably.
Yeah. Or that they're just not being truthful.
It's hard for me when I don't know what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. You don't. How do you not know what you're feeling? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I totally get that. And here's kind of a funny thing. You know, my husband is very aware of his feelings. Very aware of them. And it worked for me to be aware of mine, right? Because it's for so long, you know, I did not deal with them. Mm-hmm. And so he just, what do you mean you don't know? That's what you were saying. What do you mean you don't know? But, you know, that's kind of your and my husband's, one of your superpowers, right? Is to be very in touch with what emotions are, and to understand them, and to appreciate them, and to be able to name them in all these wonderful ways, right? And, you know, then there were other people like me who think about it for a little bit. It's not just, oh yeah, well, this is it. I think masks are a very interesting concept, right? Because a lot of the stuff we talk about, you know, are just concepts, ways to think about things, that we can see whether or not they fit into our lives. And, you know, masks don't play a very large part in your life. But for a lot of people, they do.
Right.
For a lot of people, they play a real big part. And so, for a lot of folks, you know, when they're asked to drop a mask, can be kind of terrifying. And it takes a lot of ink and a lot of knowing that they're in a safe place to be able to do it. And so that's why the rest of these questions are here, you know. What was your experience of choosing a mask to take off with us? What mask are you going to take off? Oh, and my dogs are now cheering us on. what was the feeling of my old dog's name, Tonic? My old dog's name is Tonic, and she came in here to grouse at me that her dad was telling her to shut up. Tonic, you still have to hush. So, let's see, what mask are you going to take off? Then the next question is, what was the feeling that caused you to wear this mask? And then how do you feel now that you've dropped your mask? And so, if we go back for just a minute, Verlan, and we talk about the mask that you wear at work, could you say a little bit about why that's an appropriate mask to wear?
Why it's an appropriate mask?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, I don't, I know people are different at work. Some people bring their personal life into work, and I just don't. I just don't think it belongs there. You know, I'm there to do a job and to focus and to relate to my coworkers in the sense, in the arena that we need to do our jobs, but not to share our personal lives, you know. So I feel very comfortable wearing a professional mask, you know.
Well, and I think, too, given your profession, that it's especially appropriate to wear a mask when you're creating a safe place for the people that you work with.
Right.
Your clients.
Right.
Because it's a time that's about them.
Yeah, it's not about me. The mask that I feel sad about is the mask I wear for my mom, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, we're not very close because of the mask I've chosen to wear. And sometimes I wonder if I should not wear it. And then, but every time I wonder that, I always come back to, you know, her peace of mind at her age. You know.
Well, I wonder, Verlan, if there's some way to adjust the mask a little bit. You know, so maybe instead of a full mask, right, with only your eyes showing, like, you know, we used to wear for trick-or-treating, I wonder if you made it more of a half mask with her. You know, like maybe so that your mouth was showing. You know what I mean?
So let her in on a few things, but not...
Not in a way that would disturb her, but in a way that allows you to feel more authentic with her and maybe closer.
Yeah, I feel like I need to do that, or I want to do that, you know.
Because, you know, especially, you know, since she's, you know, 91 already, it's precious time. I mean, time is always precious, but it's just, I think it puts it into a little bit different focus. Our parents are always our parents, yet they grow and change over time, too. You know, and their perspective shifts, and they learn new things. And so I think it's such a blessing that you still have her in your life that I would personally love for you to feel really close to her. How's that for a wish for you?
Yeah. It's interesting because her sister, my aunt, I talk to her once in a while on the phone. I don't have much of a mask with her. I mean, selfish. Isn't that weird?
Huh. Do you think she tells her sister? So your mom already knows?
I don't know.
Well, that will be something. Yeah.
That would be something to kind of look into a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't have any of exploration.
Uh-huh.
Yet another one. I can hear it now. Yet another one. Like I need more, Karen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, every week I come here, you give me another one. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the last question that we got up here is, how do you feel now that you've dropped your mask? You know, when I dropped my mask when I took this class way back when, I was still terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was uncertain how people would respond to it.
Uh-huh.
And I did not want to know how people would respond to it, so I just left.
Uh-huh.
I was a bit of a chicken shit. But that's how I was, right? You know, that all goes in with all of my, I don't know how to deal with emotions.
Uh-huh.
Right? It was overwhelming for me. But my experience is not the most common. Most people, once they drop a mask, feel much more calm. They feel freer.
Yeah. Freer, yeah. And just more real with people. You're more real with yourself.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. And, you know, I think, honestly, that wearing a mask is a little bit exhausting.
Oh, I think so. Because you're always either protecting yourself or protecting somebody else.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. Yeah. And yet, sometimes you wear the mask, right, like with your kids and your mom, because of love. And love is what we're going to talk about tonight.
Okay.
So, the first question I have, well, before I dive into this question, let me set it up a little bit more. You know, when I got married the first time,
uh-huh,
I got married because of love. I mean, I thought that's what you were supposed to do, right? And because you love somebody, that's how you get married to them, and that means that your marriage is going to work out because you love each other. Well,
right.
That marriage didn't work out. And so when I got divorced, I thought that I must not really know what love was. Because
mm-hmm.
Here I got married for love, the marriage failed, and so I must not really know. And I felt stupid. And I felt confused. And I felt unlovable. And so because of all of that, I think it's really important that we talk about what love is, because I'm betting that I'm not the only one who had that thought.
Oh, yeah. Everything you said, I've had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we need to spend some time figuring out what love is and maybe breaking it down and seeing how we can come up with something that works again. You know, I thought that love meant that if I did everything that my husband wanted of me, that meant I loved him, and that he should be happy, and the marriage should work.
Uh-huh.
And that's how he would treat me, that he would do things just to make me happy and take care of things so that our marriage would work.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I thought I was doing everything that he wanted. I don't know that he necessarily thought that. I do know that he did not do what I needed for,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be happy within the marriage. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he thought he did. He may have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why I think it's so important that we talk about love and that we don't get stuck here, you know, in this portion of the divorce recovery process. Because love is necessary. I mean, you know, it's a great big deal to make sure that you have love in your life. But there's different kinds of love, and not just, you know, the love of, you know, partners. So I thought that it'd be good for us to kind of kick off this discussion with identifying what are some different types of love.
Okay. So are you asking another question?
Yes. What do you think are some different types of love?
Well, I think there's parental love. You know, love for children and parents. That's two different kinds, I guess. So love for your children and
right.
love for your parents. And then there's relationship love, like family, siblings, and cousins, and, you know, aunts and uncles, and that. And then there's friendship. Sometimes they overlap.
Yeah.
And then there's like, I want to say, like, admiration or something like that.
Help me understand what you mean by that.
Well, that, you know, you love someone maybe because you admire their qualities.
Yeah, so, like the love that most people have of, like, a Gandhi or a Mother Teresa kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
Even some political leaders, you know, some people have, you know, great admiration for.
Right.
I guess Gandhi
right.
was a political leader.
Right.
Yeah. Or, hate to say it, the Kardashians. Some people admire them.
Yeah.
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 What other kinds of love?
Well, then there is marital love, or, you know.
Yeah, romantic kind of love.
Romantic
yeah.
kind of love, yeah. Let's see. Then there's self-love. Well, then there's kind of a compassionate love.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think of that with some of my clients, you know.
Yeah.
It's just not a personal, it's not a, I don't know, it's a different kind of love, but it's a love, a sort of a caring love. Or compassion
yeah.
love.
So, like the shared humanity kind of love.
Right, right.
I don't know. What else? You exhausted my list.
I did?
Yeah, you did. You even added another couple.
Oh.
You did great. And it came up cool. So quickly and easily for you, Verlan. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, now I'm going to throw out kind of a provocative comment here. See what you think about it.
Okay.
We're going to focus, you know, towards the end of our discussion on the romantic love, because that's where, you know, most people have been through a breakup.
Right.
Have a stumbling block, right? But I don't want to start there. I want to start with this concept of self-love, which was one that you brought up, and most people skip when I go through this exercise. So very, very thrilled that you brought it up. Now, here's a provocative piece. I think and believe that it's really kind of difficult to truly love a partner if you don't have a large amount of self-love.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that's true. Otherwise, the love is sort of the love for the partner is really just sort of a needy love to fill in the space where you can't love yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so you're really not loving them. You're trying to get love for yourself.
Yeah.
And you think you are.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting.
Oh, here's Hugo.
Hola, Belen. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi, Hugo. Are you well rested?
Yes, I'm good, thanks. I'm good. Yes.
Did you ever sleep?
Yes, I did.
We were just diving into the presentation, and I want to pause that discussion for just a second because you popped in, and just double check with you real quick. Is there anything that happened this week that you'd like to talk about with everybody?
Yeah. Yeah, besides how was my week, I think for me this week was the most, how can I wouldn't say maybe significant, but I would say challenging, you know, with respect to the masks, you know, because you're confronting yourself with yourself, actually.
Yeah.
And you need to be honest, otherwise you're not going to get past this thing. And, yeah. But it was a good week in that thing. So, yeah, other than that, yeah, there was something else I realized. I don't know what I've seen on the internet, but it's nothing to do with, you know, with what we're busy with. Just something interesting I saw. Maybe one of the questions, answers to some of the questions we had earlier in one of our discussions, but we can talk about that later. But that basically, yeah, for me, this week was, I would say, very challenging. Because I had to be, you know, you had to look deep in yourself to answer the questions. Why am I wearing this mask, you know? Why couldn't I be honest in my, or you know, why couldn't I be myself in my relationship, you know? And, yeah, that obviously that brought up some interesting answers, but okay. I don't know, do I need to talk further, or are we going into the...
let's do this. We're going to kind of do things topsy-turvy today. Let's go ahead and finish up with the presentation material, and then we'll wrap back around if there's time. Hopefully there will be time.
Okay.
Does that sound good? So, Verlan and I were just talking about the statement that she did not find provocative at all. She completely agreed with this statement. But the statement is that my belief and thoughts are that you cannot truly love someone else unless you love yourself.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true.
Well, then this wasn't provocative for either one of you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to me that makes sense because, I mean, supposed to be, I mean, if you don't love yourself, how can you expect anybody else to love yourself, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, as Verlan was just starting to talk about, that you have to have love in order to really give it. Otherwise, what was it that you were saying, Verlan? It's neediness? Is that the language you used?
Yeah, I think that if you don't love yourself, then what you're really doing in trying to love somebody else is to get your own fulfillment in from them to love you, because you can't give it to yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, I think it's essential that we love ourselves if we are going to have an authentic relationship of love with somebody else.
I think that's wonderfully put. So, here's the next question I have for you guys. I know that we talked about self-esteem. I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe it was three. No, it was 2 weeks ago. And, I think that there is a relationship between self-esteem and self-love, but I don't think they're the same. So, what do y'all think the difference is between self-esteem and self-love?
Yeah, that is a good one. Look,
well, self-esteem is how you I'm trying to think how I'm going to put this.
Oh, no. Yeah, sorry, Karen. I don't know. Dude, self-esteem and self-love. Yeah, in a way, yes, they are related, but they're not the same. But hell, that's a tricky question. I'm not sure.
Well, it took me a really long time to become comfortable with what I think the difference is. Would y'all like me to share that?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Please do.
Self-esteem has to do with your beliefs and feelings about yourself. and self-love has to do more with how you treat yourself.
Oh. Okay, that makes sense.
What do you guys think of that?
Self-esteem
mm-hmm.
is how you feel about yourself.
And believe. Feel and believe.
Feel and believe.
Yeah.
Self-love is how you treat yourself, how you act towards yourself.
Yeah.
That's good name. Okay. Is this a key principle in what we're going to treat tonight?
Well, because we're talking about love tonight, and we talked about self-esteem 2 weeks
yeah.
ago, I wanted to be really clear that we're not just retreading the same ground. That we're actually talking about something different tonight. So I just wanted to, you know, make sure that that kind of resonated with y'all before I move on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know how we talked about ways to build your self-esteem? You know,
yeah.
2 weeks ago, I think I had 10 ways for that. And I've got 10 ways for being more loving to yourself.
Oh.
Okay. And the first one is to stop all criticism, because criticism never changes a thing. And all you're doing is beating yourself up. And making yourself wrong or bad. So the action is the criticism, right? And then it starts attacking your self-esteem. So you see how that
okay.
kind of flows back and forth there?
So no self-criticism.
No self-criticism. Actually, criticism isn't good, isn't a really good policy anywhere, but, you know, it all starts at home.
Okay, but, okay, to an extent I agree with that, the only thing I would say is that, you know, sometimes you think about something you did wrong or whatever. And then I think what is not like I would say to beat yourself up about it, but just to say, well, thanks for what I've learned out of that. And because of what you've been through, you actually are a better person. So you because of what you learned. Because you're not going to do that. You're not going to make that same mistake again, right?
Yeah.
So actually, you are a better person because of what happened. So sorry. So if that thing flashes through yourself or through your mind, I think you just need to say, okay, thanks for that warning light or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. But you don't need to beat yourself up about it, because you're not going to do that again. You won't do that.
Self-criticism is productive rather than...
Yeah.
The self-criticism is a productive thing that you learn from rather than something that you... put you down.
Yes, don't put yourself down.
And criticism, for me, has a connotation that's very negative.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so realizing that you made a mistake is completely different than criticizing yourself for it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
A criticism is an attack.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful.
Yes.
And having a sense of regret or confusion or a flash of anger that then quickly becomes, oh, I only feel that anger because of, you know, this underlying fear of not being loved because I made a mistake, you know, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is not criticism. That's a self-awareness thing. And for me, Hugo, that's very much what you were talking about, is more of a
right.
self-awareness than a disrespectful treatment of yourself for having done something that you don't necessarily approve of after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's interesting. I don't know if I have a very narrow definition of the word criticism, but this is the one of these 10 that I almost always get discussion about when I teach this class. And I wonder, too, if it's also because I used to be so very critical of myself that I'm especially sensitive to the word criticism, too. So it's always fascinating to me to have the discussions about criticism. Do you all see the word as being as negative as I do, or is that just my personal bias then?
Well, I don't always see it as negative, because you think about critiquing something.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it's done is to help improve. So it depends on why you criticize. If you criticize to put yourself down, then it's negative. If you kind of like Hugo was saying, if you criticize to improve, then it's going to be a positive.
I think initially I thought criticism was only negative. In the work that I do, firstly, when you're doing projects and whatever, you come up with new ideas and things that you think might work, right? But then you get like Verlaine says, if you want to make this thing robust, to make sure it works, you have to test it with various people, and especially people with experience in the same arena that you want to test this, that you want this idea developed or whatever. And then people, if you come with this idea, people will give you criticism, that's right. But they will tell you, look, don't do it like this, rather do it that way. Okay? So that's what I call positive criticism. Yeah? People don't just put you down, they give you an alternative or even a better idea in their experience. And therefore, I like positive criticism, because it gives you options and even better ideas than the ones you could think of. And because you're tapping into other people's experience and knowledge. And and if you use their experience, because they've also made mistakes. When you're talking to another person that's more experienced than you or that's walked the same road, I mean, that's why I'm doing this thing, because I don't have this experience or knowledge or whatever. And I would have done many, many, many things wrong. And that's why I'm looking for guidance. from you, Karen, and also Verlaine, you've a lot of experience in your life, so I don't want to make mistakes that I could avoid, you know.
Right.
So negative criticism. To me, that's bad. You're just breaking the objective of negative criticism is to break a person down, and I hate that. I hate that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that discussion, Don. I will change the presentation material after all these years to say negative criticism instead of just criticism.
I believe there is such a thing as positive criticism. Of course, people can tell you, look, there is this idea of you're walking in the right direction, but maybe just change this or that or whatever, that sort of thing. But anyway, it's a long discussion.
Well, the second one is just don't scare yourself. I don't know about you guys, but when I was going through my divorce, I used to tell myself terrifying stories. And it was just the way my thoughts went in my brain. You know, everything ended in disaster. Everything. Everything that could go wrong ended up with me dying a horrible death. And I'm not exaggerating. It really did end up with me dying a horrible death. And it was terrifying. I felt unable to do anything, right? So I was definitely not being very loving of myself. So, you know, if you find yourself, you know, terrorizing yourself with your thoughts, you need to start having a go-to mental image that gives you pleasure and immediately switch your scary thought to a pleasant thought. And after we get through all 10 of these, I'm going to teach you a way so you can do it very easily. It's actually one of the most fun things that we can do. In my opinion, hopefully you guys will like it.
Okay.
I think this is an important one because divorce is not a positive thing that happens. Well, obviously, there are positive things and you can, but the thing is, when you go through it, the feelings associated with divorce are mostly negative, right? You tend to picture yourself with the worst possible outcomes, and these things they have a snowball effect, and they just evoke a lot more negative feelings and ideas and things. And before you can catch yourself, the snowball is running over the cliff, that sort of thing. So, at some time, maybe it's good to catch yourself before the snowball gets too big and running off the cliff. But, I'd like to know how you do that, Karen.
I hope you guys will really like it. I think it's great when I learn how to do this. Like, oh, man, this is fabulous. But I'm going to keep you in suspense. Because the next one is to be gentle and kind and patient with yourself. When you're going through a divorce, it's really easy to just force yourself to do so many things because you feel like there's an urgency to fix things, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, maybe even, you know, the first class that you called in for, you know, to talk here, was something that you're kind of forcing yourself to do. But if you can, anytime you push yourself outside of where you're comfortable being, you know, outside of your comfort zone, do it with a gentleness, a kindness, and a patience for yourself or with yourself. You're actually treating yourself with a lot of love. So when you're in awkward situations or scary situations, if you can treat yourself as someone that you really love, as someone that you're, you know, who's after trying to kick to get through it, right? Can you tell which way I have to go here? you'll actually have much better results, lower blood pressure, less stress.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that. I think initially before I started this session, this wire session, I think you're scared, you are frightened, you are you have a lot of pain and whatever, and I think realizing, you know, that other people have gone through this before and that you do have this freaking tornado effect and all that, it makes you realize that, you know, when you get into situations, don't freak out. Maybe just tone down a little bit and, you know that other people have gone through this and just chill out a bit, you know. And be like patient, be patient with yourself, because this pain thing is going to go over, and I think you need to give yourself time to feel the pain and to feel the feelings or whatever it is. But I think initially you just want to do anything to get rid of the pain or whatever, and it feels like you have to do something, but sometimes you don't have to do. You just need to feel the pain and, you know, feel the feelings, go through everything. Otherwise, you're not going to get healed, on the other side. You're not going to be healed if you go through those things. Just need to... Yeah.
That is, go through it, let yourself go through it, and at the same time, be impatient. Patient with yourself, and patient with the process.
Yeah.
And I think you have to have a little bit of faith that you're going to come out of it, you know?
Yes.
Because otherwise I think that, you know, my scary thoughts would start. I'm losing my mind. I'm never going to get better. You know, all that stuff. And then if they lock me away in a sane asylum, no one will ever come see me, and I'll die alone. Yeah, that was like, you know, a typical scary thought that I would have.
No, that's what I try to do now. You know, when something like that happens, I just say, look, this has happened. Other people, you know, I'm not alone in this boat. I know Valen is there, Tom and Judy, and Karen is proof that, you know, she's gone through this and she's there to guide us. So then I don't freak out anymore. But you still have the pain, and you tend to want to be impatient and do something about it. But yeah, I mean, then you go and exercise or do those type of things. One of those things that help you to dissipate whatever you have, anger or whatever, and then you get back to normal, that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, the fourth one I have is to be kind to your mind. And that's, you know, really from two different standpoints. The first one is that you have to take care of yourself in order for your mind to function. You have to continue eating. You have to continue drinking enough water. You have to continue moving your body. You have to continue taking time out so that your mind can function. at its best capacity. Right? And then the other way I mean to be kind to your mind is that your mind is popping up thoughts all the time. And if you start hating the thoughts that come up, you're really hating yourself. So, for example, one of the thoughts that scared the crap out of me when it popped into my mind, not once, but several times when I was going through my divorce, was, what if you just killed yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know, when it popped up, I didn't know that it was a common occurrence. I thought it was yet more evidence that I was losing my mind. So it threw me into a tizzy, and I wasn't being kind. I was doing everything I could think of, you know, to set that part of my mind up. And yet that part of my mind was the problem-solving part, saying, I don't want to hurt anymore. How can I stop hurting?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't a great idea by any stretch of the imagination, right? But it wasn't really anything that I needed to be freaked out about because it wasn't a persistent thought. Right? It was just a pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would go away. So, does that make sense, the two different ways I'm talking about being kind to your mind?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The next idea is to praise yourself. Right? To actually say, hey, I did a great job. Remember that sheet that I sent to y'all of 101 ways to praise a child or yourself?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, use them. Make up your own. Give yourself a mental high five. You know? I would hope that every time, you know, you work through more of the homework or even just make it through, you know, one of these sessions that you're thinking, I did something really great. You know, I took another step to getting through all of this. Because it does deserve to be celebrated.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that.
Good. The next
I'm going to treat myself.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to treat myself to a nice breakfast when we finish.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll work.
Yeah.
The next one is to support yourself. So you don't have to go through everything alone. You know, Part of the whole divorce experience is the intense loneliness that pops up, right? And that you can experience for long periods of time. And so it can be kind of difficult to remember that you can reach out. You can ask for support. You can ask for help. And you guys have already done that by being part of this workshop. Right? You're saying, hey, I'm going to do something that's for me, so keep up the good work and keep reaching out and support yourself every time you need it. And Verlaine shared a great story, you know, before we started recording about just needing a hug. So she called her sister up and said, hey.
I'm coming over.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful example of supporting yourself. It's fabulous. So the next one kind of ties in with number three, with being kind and gentle and patient with yourself, but be loving to your negatives. And, you know, negatives can be things that you're working on adjusting about yourself or completely changing about yourself. Or they could just be negative thoughts that pop up. You know, like the negative thought I had, right, about, you know, suicide. Right? I know now, right, I can be loving to that thought and say, oh, you were just trying to help me get out of all the pain. That was not a great idea, so try to figure out something better, right? And that's kind of what this be loving to your negatives is all about. And some people, you know, have things about themselves that they look at unfavorably. You know, especially women do this. For a long time, I was not especially happy with my nose. I thought it was too big. And I just really, you know, I started making fun of myself for it and everything else. And once I learned to say, it's just my nose. It's kind of cute with a little bottle on the end of it. You know, it stopped having so much control over me. And I started to love myself more because I could accept everything that I had judged to be negative. So the next one is to take care of your body. And it kind of ties in really closely, you know, with be kind to your mind. Because your mind lives inside of your body, kind of thing. So, you know, learn, take your time to learn about what kind of nutrition your body needs. Because everybody has a little bit different needs. I need a lot more food than a lot of people my size eat. But that's just me. I used to worry about it, but I'm hungry when I eat. Makes some people crazy to watch me eat. But, you know, I don't feel bad about that anymore. I used to feel really embarrassed. But I just know, well, it's just me. And if you don't want me to be a grouchy girl, leave me alone. And so, you know, you need to kind of figure out what works best for you so that you feel energetic, so that you feel like you're really living your life instead of just kind of going through the motions, you know, and just kind of slugging it about. You know, and exercise is a big deal, too. You know, not everybody enjoys hard exercise. Some people just really enjoy gentle exercise because that's what works best for their body. You know, there are people who are in phenomenal shape and their preferred mode of exercise is yoga, right? Which is not super duper, you know, what do you call it?
Cardio?
I just lost that word. Yeah. It's not usually a whole lot of cardio. It can be, you know, but that's not what you think of yoga being. It's not whole, what do they call the pounding exercise? Impact. It's definitely a low impact exercise, right? And yet, you know, it works really well for some people. And other people are, you know, no, I'm running marathons, I'm running a marathon a month, and other people are big into lifting heavy weights. I mean, it's whatever works best for you. So, you know, go ahead and explore all that.
Yeah.
And sleep. Yeah, you gotta sleep too. I didn't talk about sleep. Just be kind to your mind. But yeah, do what you can to make sure you get healthy amounts of sleep.
I guess I could check something with you guys. I heard somewhere, somebody said you can actually get by with 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night, or 6 to 7 hours of sleep a night. Yeah, I tend to sleep about 7 hours and then I know I'm fully rested. But I've also seen in some literature that they say, no, you know, you should actually sleep 9 or 10 hours a day. Is that really necessary, or do you just sleep until you feel, okay, I'm rested now, I need to get up? Because sometimes you don't even want to get up, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying? But is that more because you feel negative about this whole situation, or what is that?
Well, I think it's kind of a combination of things. I haven't done a whole lot of deep research on sleep. I don't know, Roland, have you?
No, but I think it's sort of like the eating thing. I mean, I think some people need more. Like,
yeah.
You go, I have to have 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night to really
okay.
feel rested. Mm-hmm. If I tried to do 5 or 6, I would be exhausted.
There's some good research out there that I just know of kind of peripherally. I haven't studied it. But your brain goes through kind of cycles when you sleep. And the sleep is necessary because it kind of cleans out all the buildup of basically waste products in your brain from the day and the hard work that you do during the day. And a lot of the researchers now are starting to liken it to like running a dishwasher. You know, so you sleep to kind of run the dishwasher. Now, typically people need, from what I understand, like 2 cycles, right? So it's like you double wash to get a good night's sleep and to get all the benefit from it that you need. And typically, those happen in about 3 to 4 hour cycles. So the people who are only sleeping 3, 4, and 5 hours a night are probably only getting 1 cycle in. Now, do they feel okay? Yeah, they probably do. But if they could sleep longer, they might feel better because their brain would be more recharged and, you know, for lack of better words, just kind of continue with the metaphor, cleaner, so it could function better.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's where the 8 to 10 hours, well, no, actually, I think they used to say 7 to 9 hours of sleep.
Yes.
And what they're finding is a lot of millennials are sleeping longer than that. And I haven't seen any real good discussions yet on why that is. It's just an observation, right? So they're saying millennials are sleeping more like 8 to 10.
And you know what?
And
in winter time, I want to sleep longer.
Yes, and that I think has a lot to do with the amount of sunlight and just the way our bodies naturally are. When it's cold and dark, I want to sleep a lot longer. This past week, we've had a couple of days that were close to 90, and I felt hugely energized and happy. Right? And today, it's been cloudy, right, and cooler. You know, our high was in the low 60s, and it's been kind of a not-so-productive day for me. You know, I've still been working, but I haven't felt completely turned on. Right? So there is something to the amount of sunlight.
Do you like going to a hibernation mode sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
The next item on the list is mirror work. Have you guys ever heard of mirror work before?
Mirror work?
No.
No. I'm trying to guess what it might be, but I just don't.
What do you think it might be, Verlan?
I don't know. Something about looking in the mirror, I guess.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's looking at yourself in the eyes in the mirror.
Okay.
Because you know how when you gaze into the eyes of someone you love, right? You gaze into your parents' eyes, you gaze into your children's eyes, you used to gaze into, you know, your spouse's eyes. Right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're wanting to connect and show them love.
Yeah.
Right? And experience love. Right? So, do it for yourself. You know, look into your eyes.
That's a good idea.
Even say, I love you when you look into your eyes. I do that and it almost always makes me smile and giggle.
You know what, man? That's very interesting. I can't help. I can't remember the passage, but somewhere in the Bible it says that the mirror to the soul is the eyes, man. The mirror of the soul. Oh, the door. I can't read because it's in my language. I can't remember the exact English words, but it says the door to the soul, or the window to the soul.
Yeah, the window.
It's eyes. So I, that's interesting. But okay, just a comment from my side. But yeah, that's really interesting. Okay.
So number 10 is to just decide you're going to do it. You know, that's a thing that you'll come back to again and again, you know, anytime you do self-improvement work, is to just make a decision to get it done. It doesn't mean it's easy, right? It just means that you're committing to do it, right? That where you've been is not where you want to be anymore, and that loving yourself is a priority.
Yeah, and I must say something.
Go ahead.
Sorry, but then.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just think sometimes, you know, when you're going through this whole business, you're not really interested in doing these things, but let's just do it because in the end you'll be better off and you'll get through this quicker. That's the thing. And also, I also find when you start doing things, firstly, when you're in the negative cycle, you don't after you've done this, you feel better about yourself, for sure.
Yeah. And Berlin, what did you want to say?
I don't remember.
Are you falling asleep, sweetheart?
I am.
Well, those were 10 ideas that I have. Do you guys have any other ideas that you think need to be added to this list of ideas for loving yourself?
Yes. I think what you need to do sometimes is to treat yourself to something that you like doing. I don't know if we've covered this somewhere. And so, you know, one thing is I like going to a good movie. I like sometimes to go for ice cream or things like that. And, I mean, my ex never liked those things in any case. So, I see nothing wrong going to a movie somewhere all by myself. You know, sometimes I drag the children along, but they tend to like these action, highly violent type of movies, which I don't have a problem with, but I like something more, with a life lesson or two, that sort of thing, you know. I like something with a good story, and then obviously I like nice ice cream as well. You know, you get these nice Italian ice creams. I really like good quality ice cream. So what I'm saying is that I think once you've achieved something or whatever, yes, praise yourself. I think it sort of fits in with that praising yourself. But I think treating yourself sometimes, say, well, I've come this far and there's still some road to go, but let's just celebrate or treat yourself, you know. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great one to add to this list.
Because I'm worth it, you know? I'm worth it.
Yeah. Totally. You're making me want ice cream, too.
I like that idea. The whole thing that you added, because I'm worth it. You know, I'm worth this.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. Okay. The suspense is over. Here's one of the most fun things. It's called creating an anchor. And this is something that I learned when I studied neuro-linguistic programming a few years ago. And it's really a fun thing to do. So I want you to start off by thinking of a time when you felt really great about yourself, when you loved who you were without any question at all. And let me know when you've got something.
I've got it. Okay.
Now I want you to keep thinking about it really, really strongly, and I want you to grab your earlobe. And I want you to remember every possible detail. And I want you to kind of keep squeezing and rubbing your earlobe. And I want you to put yourself back in that situation that you remember and make it just as vivid and wonderful as you possibly can. So you feel absolutely amazing about yourself. And just keep building it up and make it bigger and bigger and keep pulling on that earlobe. Just kind of touch it and rub it and just hold it right there. And notice that the longer that you're holding your earlobe, the more loved you feel by yourself. You just feel absolutely fabulous. And you realize how precious you really are. Okay. Now, I want you to take your hand away. But I want you all to take a nice, deep, big breath. You kind of stretch. I want you to be awake for this one, Verlan. And okay. I don't want you falling back asleep because it's extra early in the morning. Okay, so now you know you're kind of here right now. And now I want you to touch your earlobe again. And what do you notice when you touch your earlobe again?
Mm-hmm. All those feelings come back.
Yeah, all those feelings come back. Isn't that fabulous?
Yes.
Now, this is one of those tricks that you don't look like a ding-dong when you just go and grab your ear, right? So you can do this anytime you want. If you start to feel a little bit wonky in a situation, just grab your earlobe. And all those feelings will come right back.
A good trick. Thanks. Thanks, Karen. It's a good trick.
Yeah. See, this is the one I was so excited about telling you about. I think this one is so much fun.
That is great.
Yeah. Well, because it's just 2 minutes to the end of our session, I'm going to let you all read about the next session of, you know, different ways that people have of expressing love. It's completely in the book, so don't feel like you're missing out on anything. We just won't have, you know, the discussion time about it. So there we are with that. So let's go ahead and pop through these real quick and go to homework. And so, you know, reach out to each other. And Hugo, I did not make any of those recipes you sent.
Oh, yeah, they were interesting. I liked them.
Yeah. Did you try any of them?
No, I didn't try any of them. But I liked the hamburger hot dog thing.
I know, that's exactly what I was thinking about. It's like an inside cheeseburger.
Right. Yeah, that looks good.
I was just like, whoa. And as soon as I saw it, I called my husband over and said, look at this. So, have you tried any of them, Hugo?
No. I received that from a friend at work, and I thought this is something I need to share with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so continue reaching out to each other this week. Journal if you've been doing that. Keep that up.
Yeah.
And then the big challenging piece of the homework is to write a definition of love as used in a love relationship. And ideally, you'll do it before you read chapter 14. And then, of course, you can go ahead and modify it afterwards. But, you know, the text even starts out, so the text gives you a reminder on the very first page of chapter 14, where it says, what's your definition of love? Yes.
Karen, do we need to write that definition before we do chapter 14?
Yes. Yep. Do it before you read the chapter.
Okay.
And then you can change it after you read the chapter, but part of reading the chapter is helping you to build that out. And when you do the definition before you read the chapter, then you can just be really clear about what your thoughts are regarding love before you dive into it with the chapter.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, of course, you know, bring the definition with you to class next week.
Right.
Any questions?
No. Sounds easy. No. I mean, I hope it's easy.
I hope it is, too. All right. So, we've got our serenity prayer and moment of gratitude. So,
okay.
Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity.
To accept the things I can.
The courage
to
change the things
I can.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
Know the difference.
I just love that. Okay,
no.
And then moments of gratitude. I would like to start.
Before you came on the line, Hugo, and before you started recording even, Karen and I were talking a little bit, and I just found some real clarity in some of my feelings this week, and a real calmness fell upon me. And I want to thank you, Karen. I appreciate that so much.
Oh, you're very, very welcome, Verlaine. I'm so glad that our conversation sparked clarity for you.
Because I think I'm kind of trying to figure out what in the world is happening. I felt like I was flipping backwards, Hugo. And I just got the clarity about what was happening, why maybe I felt like I was flipping backwards, but I'm not really going completely back. It's just part of the spiral. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, it happens all the time. No, it happens all the time.
No,
that's the thing. That's what I say. I mean, when that it happens to me all the time, and then I says, okay, it's just part of the tornado, but I just have to feel through it, you know? And you just can't shove it away, but I mean, I think the big thing is just the realization that, you know, it's temporary. You're passing through it now. That's it. Just passing through. And if you're not going to feel permanently like that. That's the right thing.
Which is an important idea to have.
Yeah. So at least there's one scary thought out of you know, out of the window. Yeah, I'm very grateful for, yeah, for this week, because I think I had to confront myself with some things that I was thinking, and I think maybe we'll get to later on, but I'm just grateful that I could get some truth about the mask that I had been wearing in the past, you know. So yeah, that was an eye opener, and yes, yeah, I'm very grateful. Thanks, Karen. Yeah, I really enjoy this program, and there's another one like this. And thanks, Valan, for all your inputs and insights. I really enjoy and value them as well. Good to have you guys on board.
Wow, I'm going to be so brilliant, too. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I am especially thankful that you guys like the Anchor. I think it is such a cool trick, and I hope that you use it a whole lot this week.
Yes. You're talking about the earlobe thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, so you call it the Anchor. Okay.
Mhm. Yeah, it's called an Anchor.
Okay.
It's a really interesting technique to be able to teach to others. You know, I know one fella who was setting anchors in his sons from the time they were very young. Anytime they had a great experience, he grabbed their wrist and put his thumb on the inside of their wrist. And just, you know, place it there and anchor it in and encourage them, you know, to feel how wonderful they were feeling and to celebrate, you know, and just to do everything he could think of to help them to associate, you know, feeling the pressure on the inside of their wrist with, you know, feeling excited and proud and all that kind of good stuff. And you think about it, you know, it's not if you just grab the inside of your wrist with your other hand, right? It's not that odd odd way to sit.
No.
Nobody's going to notice it.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, if you're pinching the end of your nose constantly. There's something like that. Well, that's all that I had planned for tonight. Verlan, I know that you're struggling because it's past your bedtime. And if you'd like to go ahead and leave, that's perfectly fine. What I'd like to do, though, for Hugo, because I hear that you'd really like to be able to share your mask, is I'd like to wrap back around to the mask portion and ask you to share your mask if you're up for it.
Okay. Well, we had time at the beginning, so I think that's appropriate. Okay. So I'm going to hang up, guys. It's time to go to bed.
All right. Sweet. Thank you,
all right. Thank you so much, Hugo and Karen.
Yeah, Valan. Have a good rest.
Okay, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, Hugo, are you okay with me continuing the recording while we talk about your mask, or would you prefer that I turn it off?
No problem. You can record it, you know, if somebody else can learn from this. I think...
That would be great.
Yeah.
Verlan, I'd
like to
have a mask to take off. So,
okay.
Having this experience, you know, recorded will be really, really great. For Tom and Judy to hear the full thing. So,
okay.
You know, you kind of dropped hints about your experience of choosing a mask to take off with us. But what really was your experience of choosing a mask to take off for us tonight?
Well, what I realized when I read through this whole masks thing is that well, obviously everybody wears masks, and sometimes appropriate and not. But I think in a loving relationship, I don't think it's appropriate to have masks. I think that's exactly the place where you actually should be yourself, and you should feel safe to be yourself. Okay? And
yeah.
And exactly, here's the thing where I would say the positive criticism comes in. You know, when if I make myself vulnerable to my partner or whatever, I would expect them to be, you know, to give loving criticism, if I can call it that, you know, or positive criticism. So, okay, let me go back to my marriage, because that is where this mask that I want to talk about is. That's where I used it. And initially when we got married, I don't believe I had any masks, because I was feeling confident that, you know, Christine was my soulmate, and therefore I could share anything or whatever with her, you know. But I, soon after we got married, when she got upset or whatever, you know, she started screaming and all these kind of things, and I thought, okay, that's fine. I apologized for everything I did wrong, if you could put the "did wrong" in brackets, because I sometimes didn't think I did anything wrong. And she also screamed and freaked out, you know, that sort of thing. And then after a while, I think I did a course at work or something about, they call it assertiveness or whatever. And I realized, look, maybe I, you know, she's been, I don't know, I thought she was being, I could put my finger on them. And obviously, early in your marriage, you don't know too much, right? You think you're going to go into a loving relationship for the rest of your life, and you don't realize what baggage some people bring into the relationship. We knew each other for about, I would say, 9 months before we got married, and I think it just, it's one thing that I learned is that I think if you're going to a marriage again, you better know the person very well, before you do that. Because what happened is, like I said, when she started, I felt that she was criticizing me, you know, in a way that, negative criticism, and and that I had to hide. I had to, you know, feel safe in some kind of way. And then I started wearing a mask in ways that I didn't. I started, you know, counting my words when I said certain things, or you know, like you need to tread on, you need to tiptoe around the person, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that wasn't, you know, you shouldn't be like that around somebody that's supposed to love you, or that you love, or like I say, you know, in a loving relationship. So I tried various things, and I tried the assertive thing, you know, if she was freaking out or whatever, or cussing at me or whatever, I started doing that back. And that also doesn't work, because you just escalate. I mean, what do they say? You can't fight fire with fire, you know, or you can't fight fire with petrol. So that sort of thing, you just make an explosion. So in the end, it was very difficult. We couldn't really say anything to each other, because it felt like I didn't know her anymore, you know, and, you know, it was so strange. And then I realized I was wearing a mask. When we read through this whole thing, I realized I was wearing a mask, because I was feeling unsafe in my relationship. And I didn't know was that the right thing to do or not. Obviously, now after reading that thing, I think I should have just stayed true to myself and not wear the mask. Because what I realized afterwards is that I should not have been feeling insecure because of what's happened. Because she's had, she comes from a dysfunctional family, to say it very, you know, very short. And obviously, you know, if you talk about dysfunctional, all families are dysfunctional, but some are more than others, you know. And if you look on a scale of 1 to 10, I cannot say that I haven't been in a dysfunctional family, but I think hers were more dysfunctional. If you look about the about the ways that her mom and dad fight it and whatever, it definitely I would say positive in, you know, in building the self esteem and self love in a child and that sort of thing. So when I realized that, I thought the best way I should have handled that was to be true to myself, but just to realize that, look, it's not about me, because I always thought it was something that I needed to change inside of me, and actually it wasn't. It was her, you know. She was reacting in a way because of the baggage that she had, and she was just venting to me, that sort of thing, you know. And I think I should have just stayed true to myself and not reacted in the way I did. Firstly, to attack her back, that sort of thing. And I just should have realized that it wasn't about me, it's about something else, you know. And she's just trying to... Sorry, are you there, Karen?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
She's just trying to... She's venting all her past frustrations and reacting towards things in her childhood. I can just explain something to you. When we want to go somewhere over a weekend or on holiday or something, I'm one of these guys that I try to use different routes because I can see different things and all of that. I like exploring, you know. It's not like that. She wants to go to the destination and get there, and then she can relax. That sort of thing. I get relaxed away, you know, once I get into the car and, you know, once I'm on holiday. And then, obviously for her, the shortest route is we use the toll road, and I don't want to drive the toll road. I want to go the back road and see all the little places and these kind of things. That used to irritate the hell out of her. And then she would make... And because, you see, and that comes from her family. Her dad used to be a guy that also wanted to take the back road. And her mom was one, also one that you want to use the shortest route. And then her mom used to make comments and negative and, you know, doomsday and I don't know what else. So it's something that comes from her past. And I, because I was acting in the way her father did, in some way then, you know, this whole negative emotions appeared in her as well. It's just one thing. I'm not talking about all the others, you know, the way she screamed at me. And my mom and dad never used to, I never even once saw them screaming at each other. They used to, you know, when they differed, they went to some place and they talked about it. And then when they came back, they sorted it out and they were like, I mean, they held hands. Even, I mean, my dad was 55 when he passed away. I mean, they were holding hands and things like that until, you know, until the end. So I only saw a loving relationship in my mom and dad, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. So yes, so I had this mask, and at that time I thought that was the best way to do it. But now with hindsight, I see that it was not a good thing to do. That's what I believe now. I believe it was the wrong thing to do. You know?
Remember when we talked about adaptation the second week?
Yes.
You adapted to her fit throwing.
Yeah.
And that became your mask.
Yes. Yeah. So that's another way I contributed to this whole, to where I am now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I realize that. But I, like I say, if I have to criticize myself, I didn't know that at that stage, at that stage it seemed like the best decision. I didn't have better knowledge. So it's water under the bridge. I need to learn out of this, and I'm not going to make this mistake again.
So, how do you feel now that you've been able to talk about it?
Well, I feel great in the sense that I think I have found another way not to do a marriage, you know. And in a sense I feel sad that I did the wrong thing, you know, that I made this mistake, and I could have done something better. But like you said, you shouldn't beat yourself up about this, because at that stage I didn't have better knowledge, you know. If I had better knowledge or experience or whatever, I would have done it differently. But now I know better, so I will make the better decision in future.
So,
I feel positive about this, because now I think it's a good thing that it's one of those, what did you call that, Johari window, ne?
Mm-hmm.
That Johari window. It's one of the things that I didn't realize, you know, and one of the things I didn't know about myself, so it's a good thing.
Yeah. Did your experience of acceptance and appreciation of it shift in any way because you were able to talk about it with me?
Yeah. Well, obviously you're the first person that I talk about it now. I haven't spoken to anybody about this before, and yes, I think it's good to share this with some people, because if I can help them with the mistakes that I've made, I think if I can help anybody at all with this, then I feel great about it.
Well, I'm wondering too, you know, because a lot of people, once they're able to actually share a mask with someone
yeah.
else or someone's else, they'll often feel a sense of relief.
Yes, yes, yeah, that's what I
hold it on their own.
Yes, yeah, I feel the relief as well. Once I realized it, I felt the relief, but. Obviously, when I share this, I also feel relief, you know?
Yeah.
But
I have the impression... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, once you realize that, you get the aha thing, you know? Aha, this is how it works.
Yeah.
And then, at that moment, you feel good because it's like a key and you've unlocked something, you know? You've unlocked some good stuff, and that is good. And if I can unlock some good stuff for other people by sharing it, I also feel good about that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's really important to become more and more aware of what masks we're wearing. And in your case, you know, you worked really hard to find one that was in the unknown area of the Johari window, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people have just hidden parts of themselves. And so they'll choose to drop masks that they're purposely wearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think you kind of did extra credit.
Okay, thanks for that. The thing is, well, Karen, I just thought, you know, if I want to get through this and be a better person, it's worthwhile to dig as deep as you can, you know, and to find out about the. You know, like that Johari window thing, I think that's, obviously you know about the Johari window and whatever, but only once I read through the passage of the mask, I really realized that, you know, this is something that I've been doing, and it's something that I shouldn't do in future, because But like I said, initially I didn't have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because of the, you know, the intensity of the conflict and these kind of things, I had to find a way to make things work or to make it better or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
obviously, wasn't the best choice, you know. Wasn't the best choice.
Looking backward, right, it wasn't the best choice. At the time, it was the best one you knew how to make.
Yeah, yeah. At the time when I had to look at the solution, it was probably the best one, yeah. But now looking back, I see it was actually a better solution. But okay. Well, I don't know how you would have thought to handle situations like that, but I think in the first place, if I had my life over again, or if I had to advise my children, I would tell them, hey, look, you better know somebody very well before you get married to them in the first place. In the second place, make sure that you, you know, that you don't wear masks, and, you know, when somebody brings their baggage into your marriage, you you better be able to handle that in a, you know, in a way that you don't feel that you are the problem. And because initially I thought I was the problem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I after a while I realized, look, and like you say, I also have this over responsibility thing, right? Then I try to make everything right and you can't. I can't, you know, create happiness for somebody else. It's something that they have to be happy with themselves. You know? You can't make everybody else happy. You can't do that. They have to be happy with what they are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you don't go around purposely trying to challenge their happiness either, right? But you can't make it that way for them.
No, you can't. So yes, I'm in a sense I'm very grateful that I had to. I think if I could rate my mom and dad on a scale, I would rate them quite high. But there are things that they didn't learn or tell me. Right? Like for instance, if I knew about these things, I would have been more prepared. But then again, they also came out of happy marriages and whatever. They don't know about these things, so how could they have? So I can't blame them, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I can't really blame them. They couldn't. They were not able to prepare me. They couldn't because they didn't know about these things. So, but now I am prepared, so I can prepare my children, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have children, Karen, or do you?
No, I don't have children. My husband has kids and grandkids, and I have pets.
Yeah. It's, the thing with children is I just, you know, they... I wouldn't say, yes, they do make you more vulnerable in a certain sense, but I think they also, you know, they challenge you to think on a different level because you also want to what's best for them, you know, for the rest of their life and whatever, and you try to always do what's best for them and try to prepare them for life and all these kind of things. And because if you don't do that, I mean, you're not really a good parent. But
mm-hmm.
in the end, they also have to make their own decisions. And you can't force their free will and those kind of things, you know. So, yeah, in the end, I try to do my best. Like I say, they can also mess up their lives if they want to. and I should feel guilty about that if I do, you know? That sort of thing. But okay.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad that we had time to do this tonight.
Yeah. Yes. It was very good. I enjoyed it.
Wow. I am feeling the call of my bed now. It's getting late for me. So I'm going to wish you a very happy day and a wonderful week.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Have a good rest. And I'm off to breakfast now. Okay.
Have a wonderful one. Even if you have a little bit of ice cream at the end after all that talk about ice cream, Hugo, I think it might work out just right.
Okay, Karen.
All right. Take good care of yourself, Hugo.
Thanks, Ray. You too. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.